Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the team. And this year we've got the SAS, Sass. She is in the house. How are you doing, Sarah?
This year, this isn't my first one this year, but yeah, I'm delighted to be here. Yeah, I said year, but you know, if you miss me that much, I'll take it. I'm delighted to be here with you, Paul. I listen to every episode you ever record, so it's always a pleasure. And this particular guest, I have been chasing for a while, so I'm delighted that we're all together.
It is really cool. And I think the lady in question that we are joined by today has quite a big resume. Yes, quite big, and doing a lot, but also doing an incredibly important job today. And we are joined by the CEO of the EVA. Tell us what the EVA is and what you do there and the mission that you guys are involved in.
Yeah, I will. Well, thanks very much for having me on, both. It's really good to be here. Yeah, so we're EVA England. So there are actually four EVAs in the UK, one for each nation. But we represent sort of English drivers, although having a discussion with some of my colleagues in the other EVAs, if you drive between borders, you're welcome to be part of both EVA England, EVA Scotland, EVA Wales. So we represent the driver in the kind of EV transition. So our role is really a bit of a consumer champion role to try to make sure that the EV system works for all of us. So we know EVs are great. Like, you know, we have sort of 500 plus paying members who love their cars. However, EVs at the moment are still really great if you have a driveway, if you have the money, and if you don't have a disability. If you don't have a driveway, if you don't have the cash, and if you do have a disability, then the system isn't quite working for everyone. And it's our job to try to both raise the profile of how great these cars can be, but also kind of campaign for government regulatory change and industry change to make sure that the whole world does work for them and that they can transition to the future of the car industry, which is electric.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
There's no one better for the job, Vicky. You have this wonderful ability to bring something that feels complex to some to make it really simple for others. And I only just joined. I can't believe I've known about the EVA for so long and only a month ago joined. It's like 10 quid and already I've been invited to town halls where I get to hear from people who work for EVA England or for other driver representation who can answer all my questions. And there's a really sort of jolly newsletter that comes out. But as you say, it's not just EVA England, it's also EVA Wales, it's EVA Scotland. And so what you're really trying to do is galvanise that driver's voice, get more bums on seats to see if EV could really work for them. But this wasn't your first rodeo. Can you tell us a bit about where you were before EVA England? Because I think a lot of people have known you from your previous role as well.
Yeah, so I have to. Yeah, so I spent a long time in government, mostly in the Department for Transport on transport policy. But the last 7 years, very much focused on transport decarbonisation, where I did 3 years as head of what was then OLEV with Natasha Robinson. So she's also, I think, another big name, a big name in the industry, possibly bigger than mine, actually, because she outlasted me and stayed on after I sort of vamoosed off. So yeah, Natasha and I were the kind of senior officials that were there when we put the original 2030 target in place, end of sales target for petrol and diesel. We also kind of did a lot of the groundwork for what is now, well, was the Rapid Charging Fund, which has now morphed probably into something else entirely around EV charging infrastructure, and some of the groundwork for what is now Levi, and set up the AV Act 2018, which is the first kind of big kind of consumer protection act around the electric vehicle world. So I think, you know, we were sort of there in the kind of sort of mid days of what I say is kind of OLEV, really trying to think about the mass market and what needed to happen then. I have to say, though, I think I left that sort of policy world for a couple of years. I went off to do some EV advice for the Energy Systems Catapult, and then I went into the aviation world for a bit. And when I came back, the EV world has it's massive now. So, you know, there are so many more companies, there are so many more people working in the sector, which is really good to see. But I sometimes think that although I spent a long time in it and have a good CV on EVs, I'm probably not as well known as maybe some who've been around in the last sort of five or six years when it really started to kind of to sort of bloom. So it's actually really good to be back. And yeah, as you say, so just to try to raise the profile of the driver's voice, which I was surprised when I started this job, how low down I felt it was, kind of given some of the groundwork that we did back in OLEV to try to make sure that consumers were protected in this industry and that their needs were met. So yeah, it is good to be back to try to rattle the cages a bit.
You did an amazing job. Rattle the cages and ruffle the feathers, indeed. And the work that you did back there in OLEV, OZEV, as many people know it, the Office for Zero Emission Vehicles, used to be called Office for Low Emission Vehicles, because it encountered lots of different types of vehicle within that fund. And I benefited it from myself. 7 million, in fact, went in locally in the west of England. And a lot of that infrastructure was vital in proving to businesses and individual drivers that EV could be for them, even at a time where EV was hard. And I agree with you. I jumped the fence 3.5 years ago now from installing hardware and working for charge point operators into what is now the software and payments that fulfills that need when drivers encounter a charger. And you and I just last week did a wonderful webinar with the REA, the Renewable Energy Association. So Matthew Adams, who's also been a guest on the EV Cafe podcast, we heard a lot of his secrets. I recommend you listen to that episode. It's a lot of fun. The payments webinar was focused on drivers. So what is the issues that they have been experiencing whilst paying for the charge? So we've kind of had range anxiety. That's been and gone. The cars now do the distance. We've had charger anxiety. That does still happen. Will it work when I get there? What? And then we've got this new one, payment anxiety. What are drivers saying to you in these town halls and in a response to your newsletter about the difficulties of paying for the charge when they get there?
Yeah, and I think actually the work that you and Peter and Ari are doing on this is really helpful, because government takes time to sort itself out. You know, regulations are complex and lengthy and have to be heavily consulted on, but an industry-led initiative is always really welcome. And certainly when I was back in government, we loved industry to take the lead on things because it was just quicker, it was easier, and it also showed that there was a willingness from the industry to make the sector work for consumers. So I was really pleased to take part in the webinar. And I think I said that I think one of the biggest people come to our website often when they're really frustrated and they were asked to go and they want to know how to sort things out. And the two things we get emailed the most about are payment processes and the frustrations that people have, largely around roaming and the lower powered charge points where people are fed up. They still have to use multiple cards, multiple apps. Why can't we have contactless? What's happened to the roaming provisions? I thought we were only supposed to be able to use one card. And that's one of the single biggest frustrations. And the other is people, tenants and leaseholders who want to install the charge point and landlords just say no. So those are the two kind of the two pieces that we get emailed the most about, because I think there isn't, I think it's just day-to-day levels of frustration that build up as people are using the charging network, and it just isn't as simple as they want it to be, or the frustration that actually they really want this sector and they can't transition to it because somebody just won't help them sort out one really key piece, which is getting a charge point. So I think it's just really interesting that those are the two issues that we get emailed about the most.
And it's interesting, isn't it, Vicky, because it's almost like it's no longer about the driver as such, or the vehicles as such. Probably the vehicles. The driver is the key piece of this. And, you know, from my world, as you know, I couldn't care less about cars. But I do very much care about drivers. And because drivers are drivers of vans as well as cars. And I over-exaggerate with not caring less. But is it now, do you think, the critical piece to be able to kind of solve the wider issue of charging? Because it is becoming more and more a focus of not the vehicle. The vehicles, as Sarah's alluded to, they do the job and all that sort of stuff. Is it the charging itself? Because it certainly is in the van world. You know, you can't get chargers to where they need to be. How do you see both government role and your role kind of meeting in the middle on there to solve a challenge that will deal with both cars and vans in the driver form?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of commonality between what car drivers and van drivers face when it comes to their needs for charging infrastructure, especially those who are using their vans for their work and just really need to be able to charge them when they need to charge them. I think this is always the most challenging part of the transition. So the people without driveways, the people who need charging infrastructure to be where they need it to be at a price they can afford and for it to be accessible, because it is a new technology, it is a new world. We're transitioning, but we're transitioning very quickly. So I love that we've got loads of charge points in the ground. I love that we're kind of heading towards 85,000. I love that they're going in the ground every 30 minutes. But as a consumer champion, I'm also like, but are these charge points going to work? Are they in the right places? And can people with disabilities use them? And that's probably my biggest issue at the moment is that these charge points need to be accessible. And how often do they turn over? And are we suddenly going to have to retrofit a whole system? So I think, you know, it's great that we're getting the charging out there, but it does need to be in the right place. And it does need to work for people and be affordable. And I think the underlying issue is also the grid connections, because that's the biggest part of the challenge. It's kind of what drives where they can go rather than necessarily where consumers need them. It's really expensive. It causes, the industry, I think the CPO, the charge point industry, are investing in grid upgrades, which then the consumer have to pay for, which is, you know, there's this whole kind of cycle around what's happening with the energy system. And as a sort of EV transport person, I find it really hard to unpick that. And I get the sense that quite a few in the sector do as well. And I think that kind of join up between the transport and energy worlds, to me, perhaps isn't, I mean, it was an issue when I was in OLEV years ago. Like, are we talking different languages? Are we really joining it up? And I think it's probably moving, but is it moving enough? And, you know, I don't know enough about market reform. I don't know enough about what the work Ofgem are doing on grid connections. I don't know if it's going to solve some of the consumer issues. And it's really hard to get your kind of teeth under the skin of some of these really knotty energy system issues.
But isn't that exactly it? The drivers don't know about the complexities of grid connections, and they don't understand why those hubs were placed where they were. We know it's because it was the cheapest way to connect to the grid. We know that it was because the land acquisition was easier at site A than at site B. And all the driver sees is, why is it 89 pence per kilowatt hour, when it's only 79 pence just down the road, or even less if I download the app. It's just too inconsistent. And slightly before your brilliant webinar, I was invited as part of the Transport and Environment, which is a really big study, an embargo study, a data study. And it showed that of 250,000 comments were analysed, AI comments were analysed, to see how much of that noise out there relates to the different areas of the market that we know are a concern. Only 4% related to the pence per kilowatt hour. Only 4% was about the cost. Everything else was the major concern. So, you know, where will I find it? How do I get there? Why can't I use a single payment card? Why is one charge point operator more expensive than the other? Why can't I have a charger at my block of flats? And so it says to me that bodies like the EVA, EVA England, Wales and Scotland, it's so important that we get that translation right. What more do you think businesses in the EV ecosystem like ours should be doing to make that translation easier? We think we're talking sense. The driver doesn't think so.
Yeah, and I sometimes sort of like to think about the conversation I have with friends and family, and the school gate, I find, is a really valuable source of information on kind of how people are thinking about EVs and how they understand them. I personally, I'm not a great detail person. I'm not very techie, and I really hate IT and all that stuff. So I think I'm quite a good test case. If I understand it, then other people ought to understand it. And I think it's really simple. So I think we talk about signage, we talk about charge point signage, but which is really important, signposting where charge points are. But actually, is there enough that industry is doing to help people through the kind of plugging in and paying process? And I think probably not. Like, if I'm honest, you know, I've had quite patchy experience recently. I was on the public network where the whole sequence of how you're supposed to do stuff is just, why do we have to do it in a particular sequence in order to connect? Like, it's really annoying. But also that I was talking with somebody about the language. So I know we all used to fuel pumps. I know we were all used to kind of pulling in petrol stays. And, you know, I was talking with somebody about kind of pre-authorizations and, you know, but actually, if you've got the language right at the charge point, what does it actually mean? Because it happens in the wet fuel markets, I'm told, but it's done in a different language. Everyone's used to it. Everyone understands it. Why can't we use that same language in the charge point world so people understand what it is they're paying for and when they're paying for it? And it is really difficult to go from, you know, this is, do I understand the size of my battery, what it means, and therefore kind of how much I should be paying to charge, like roughly kind of if I want to, you know, do half a battery kind of when I plug in. And I'm not sure everyone does. So I think, you know, us in the sector, yes, we talk it all the time. But if I talk to several contacts of mine have an EV and have no idea what size their EV battery is, have no idea. They've never used the public network. They don't want to. They hire a petrol diesel car if they want to go on holiday in the UK because they just don't want to use the network. So I think we kind of overlook quite how difficult people are finding this and how, you know, you have to be really willing to kind of enter a new world and play around with it and put up with some of the frustrations at the moment. And if we want the mass market to get behind this, we've got to make it easier for people. We've got to make it just so easy and obvious that once they've done it the first time, oh, that was so simple. Like, of course, I'll do that again. And I think we're not quite there yet. But we'll get there, I hope.
We certainly will. And I think there's loads of questions going around in my head. But I think just to come to your point really there, how do we get this information out? Because I know we are extremely guilty of being in the 2 or 3 or maybe 5% of the park kind of bubble where everything is electric and we know a little bit about it. But even probably 50, 70, 75% of that park don't really know what they're sitting on, what the battery chemistry is, why that makes a difference, what's the difference between a kilowatt hour and a kilowatt, you know, because we've got 2 kilowatts and a kilowatt hour and its energy and its speed and its size. And it's, I mean, it's complicated even for those of us in it. How do we educate? And I know the EVA is set up to kind of facilitate that. What is your mission going forward for the next sort of 6-12 months? How are you imagining this rolling out and broadening that understanding?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to do so much more than I think we're able to do at the moment with the numbers and the resources that we have. But I, you know, we talk a lot in the kind of EVA England office, which is very small, about can we do more users guides. So we do have, you know, we do have frequently asked questions on our website, but at the moment our best way of doing that is to contribute to the work that others are doing. So I think, you know, we want to work. So the new £25 million cost pavement fund, for example, it's for local authorities. You know, previously government, when it puts its guidance out, it's very targeted towards the industry, to installers, to local authorities, to those who need to know how to access and use the money. It's not really tested on consumers. And when I read through it as a driver, I don't get it. So what we're hoping to do is actually make or turn any guidance that goes out on that into something that residents understand, and working with the people producing that guidance to understand, actually, if I'm a resident, this is what I do. This is the process I go through. This is what I pay. Because nothing clear like that is coming out of some of these sort of big kind of policy announcements. And we do explainers when, you know, we did an explainer on the electric car grant because, you know, there's so much confusion about what it meant. And I think partly perhaps because I was there for the old plug-in car grant, it's just actually, this isn't as difficult a process for the driver. You turn up to the dealership, they sort out the back office stuff, you pay the price minus the discount and they sort it out for you. So trying to get people to understand they don't need to get their heads around all of this. They just need to understand what models are available for that discount price, are they at a level they can afford, and then the dealership will do the rest. So I think it's just trying to translate it into driver speak. And as I say, where we know about stuff, we can contribute and we can work with people and make sure it kind of covers that resident or kind of driver angle. We would like to do more. We would like to have a much better kind of information set of pages on our website that really go through some of this into detail.
And we are much more familiar with the viral post that goes out that everybody starts talking about, aren't we? And we probably all can think of one that went like round the world a million times. Highly inappropriate to mention on this. However, how do we go viral? Because that is seemingly the only way that we can get information out there. Because I wanted to ask you a slightly sensitive question. The government have just spent 600 and whatever it is million on arguably something that nobody really asked for. They've also put 30 odd million into depot charging and other things like that, which it's okay, maybe a drop in the ocean, but you know, okay. And the 25 million you've said about going across pavements, could some of that money have been taken. And again, it's one of the things that we've been asking for, that government, instead of just throwing money out there, should kind of create content and, you know, kind of get information out there. One, do you think the money was well spent or is being well spent? And two, could we invest from a government perspective in a nationwide information front offensive? That's the word I was looking for.
Yes. I mean, the car grant, yes. I mean, I personally would like to see something go to the used car market as well, but we're still working on that. I think what people perhaps isn't being talked about enough, and which we talk about a bit on our website or hint at, is that the ZEV mandate has created so much confusion for customers because it's been wobbled on so many times. So, you know, it was put in place. It was a great thing. Everyone was signed up to it. And then you had the sort of issues with the emission zone in kind of London, the kind of local election issue. Suddenly, you know, the previous government was talking about, okay, no, we're not going to do 2030 anymore, we're doing 2035. And that was the point at which consumer confidence in the EV market took a massive hit. And I think people forget that. So I think from my point of view, now what the new government is trying to do is try to restabilize it and say that we're committed to 2030. Here's the mandate that sits behind it. But I think there's been so much rattling of the cages in the background, so much debate about it, so much negative press. Whether kind of the car manufacturers have wanted that or not, I don't know. But it's not helped consumers fall behind this transition. So what we need is to stabilize that. And I actually think the car grant is an attempt to do that. And I think we forget about that. You know, this is what manufacturers asked for. They wanted support. They said they were spending billions discounting cars. Government can't spend billions. Like, it's got to think about taxpayer value for money. So they've put something in place that is easy for them because it's administratively exactly the same as the plug-in car grant, and they can do it really quickly. So in a sense, what I don't understand is why all the negative press on this. Like, you know, actually, this is a really good thing. Like, you asked for this, we've got it. It's going to help get more people into the cars because it is going to bring prices down for some people to a level that's affordable. And it's a good thing. Like, it's government saying that we've listened to you, we've responded, here's something we can do really quickly. I'd like there to be a parallel something on the used car market. And, you know, we're working with a couple of other partners on what that might look like and continue to talk about it. You know, that's where most private buyers buy their cars. Prices are dropping. And depending on kind of what you read, they're really good. People are really interested, but they're still not as cheap as buying a secondhand kind of petrol diesel car for many people. So, you know, we do need to think about how to make that market much more affordable for the people who used to only pay a couple of £1,000 for their cars. So I think, you know, there's still a lot of raising of awareness that needs to be done on that market. And I think the charging stuff, like, it's not as much. It's really good. I think just the focus on cross pavement for a financial incentive is really important because it makes local authorities think more seriously about it as an option. And we know it won't work for everyone, but it does allow some people access to cheaper charging rates. And that is really important. So, you know, I think there's a real will in government to try to tackle some of the big issues and try and get there. But you're right, swaying public opinion is the biggest challenge, misinformation. And I don't think the previous Go Ultra Low campaign, which lots of people talk about, will work anymore. Because when that was set up, you only had a much smaller number of products and you also had a much smaller number of charging companies. Now you have this huge industry that's really burgeoning. It's not going to be possible to have a one-stop shop for every single energy tariff and every single product that's out there that's hosted by government. Like, companies should be advertising that themselves. But can government do some kind of paid for media that goes out and kind of just says these are really good cars? Yes, they probably can. And I do think there are some conversations around that. You know, as a consumer body, we'd like a bit more focus on dealerships as well and point of sale. So there's that kind of, you know, once people are interested and they start talking to dealerships and salary sacrifice schemes, they don't often hear what they want to hear at that point. There's a lot of misinformation at that point. So I think hitting that sort of strategic comms kind of level of, you know, let's tell everyone how great these cars are. And then actually the details, what do I need to know when I buy the cars is also equally important. I think influencing both of those levels is going to be really important and something we would like to do more on as well in terms of our work with dealerships and educating people at that point of sale.
Well, we are well up for it. We had a really cool idea on a webinar once. EV Cafe is proud to be sponsored by Europcar. And I suggested to Tom Middleditch, who's sort of marketing team there, leading a lot of the incentives they do, wouldn't it be cool if you could partner someone like Europcar with dealerships to say, if you hire this vehicle for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you will get the cost or near to cost parity off the final price of the same car or another EV, should you then buy from us. So it's a cost is baked in, but it's just a really risk-free way of a driver. Do you think dealerships are A, doing enough, and B, have got enough support?
Yeah, I mean, I think some probably do know this stuff, and I've sort of done a, I mean, I know there was there's been some mystery shopper kind of rounds of dealerships lately. There's one really near us, so you walk in and they know a lot about the cars. Unfortunately, not as much as myself and my husband, but enough to sell to somebody who doesn't know this sector at all and is stepping into it for the first time. And they gave a lot of good advice around taxation. I think probably I'd say the majority don't. And I think, you know, we talked a bit about charging, allowing people to go away with a better understanding of what that means for them to understand, well, if you have a driveway, you'll be charging mostly on that. You charge roughly this number of times a week. If you're using the public network, this is how you use it. You know, did you know? I think just that kind of basic education probably isn't going on. Like, what does the battery mean? Like, how do you look after your battery? Like, I hear a lot about, you know, we've got some brilliant stats. The batteries do really well most of the time, but not if people are not looking after them. You know, if people are sitting on rapid chargers, charging to 100% all the time, then their battery is going to degrade much faster than the stats suggest. And when they hit the second-hand market, you know, we hear about a lot of problems now coming through where people have sort of put cars on second-hand market where the battery is degraded to such an extent that, you know, the car is, you know, it's just not the same car that they had signed up to buy. And so just that sort of basic information, let's help people through this journey to a new technology, I don't think is universally there. And it doesn't need to be that difficult. I don't know how the car industry and dealerships kind of work together. I know the NFDA have a sort of coalition of dealerships who are really good at this stuff, but I don't know enough about kind of who's working, you know, between manufacturers and their dealerships, who's giving the information down to that point of sale, and is it the right source of information? Who's responsible for doing that? I think that would be good to unpick a little bit.
It is definitely one of the challenges I agree with you wholeheartedly on. I know a dealer group that employed little old me to do training for their sales teams. And literally they walked into the two manufacturers in question and held up a picture of me, it's very surreal, and said, we are having to use this guy because you are not training us and not training our staff. So, I mean, there's a responsibility on manufacturers for getting this information into the dealers. We agree there's a responsibility on government. And EVA England and the other ones are doing a great job with limited resource of really connecting with drivers and doing that education piece one by one. But I totally agree, we need to go mass market with this. Now then, I want to know who this person is that is leading this charge in EVA, because we've heard that you've done a little bit in OLEV, and as was Office for Low Emission Vehicles, but OZEV now, and you've been in government for a long time. And, you know, almost all of your early experiences were there. And it's clear, actually, everybody, she's very clever. She's got a university degree from Oxford, in fact, two degrees. But I noticed that they're not in your subject of today. More animal focused, it seems. talk to us about just that period before you went to university. What was your dream as you took on a doctorate, so a PhD in zoology and animal biology, but also biology and biology sciences in general? So what was the dream of Vicky Edmonds as you grew up? And maybe you weren't Edmonds at the time, I'm not sure, but anyway, what was your dream, Vicky, as you grew up and tackled university and looked out at the world ahead?
You've done your research. I was Edmonds, yeah, so I kept my name in a very kind of a very sort of feminist statement sort of way when I got married at the time. I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, I right now, I was supposed to be in the middle of a rainforest counting monkeys or something. that was my dream. So, I mean, when I was a kid, like, I was super into my kind of biology and animals, and I guess that translated into biodiversity when you kind of get a bit older. And that translated into just really caring about the climate and the planet and starting to get a little bit alarmed about, I guess, some of the stuff that seems to be being ignored. You know, I think somebody once showed me that horrible graph of carbon emissions suddenly shooting up. And I think, you know, I thought I really need to work on this when I'm older. But yeah, I was quite happy kind of in the biodiversity sort of zoology world for a while. And then I guess realized that research wasn't really for me, academic research. So my parents were both academics. So that's kind of, I guess that's why a lot of us start down our chosen initial routes. To be really good at research back then, I think you had to be working on, you know, something that was to do with cell biology, not counting monkeys in rainforests. So I think, and somebody suggested I apply for the civil service. They said, actually, you know, you can bring your scientific kind of knowledge to that world. And so I said, oh, I'll give it a go. Had no real interest in politics at the time or anything like that. And anyway, we ended up getting in and ended up actually, I think, just really finding my feet. Like I think for my personality, I like stuff that's quite interesting, that's, you know, complex kind of problems that you can kind of delve into, but it's also quite fast paced. And I think, so I think I found my home there. And I was there for a couple of decades, kind of switching between different roles. But I definitely had a target that I wanted to move into the decarbonisation world. And it took a bit of time to get there. So I sort of, you know, as you sort of move up the civil service career ladder, you sort of become a little bit more in charge of your destiny, I think. And so ended up in transport decarbonisation, which is where I really wanted to be, that kind of decarbonisation world. And and I've stayed in that world ever since. And then obviously electric vehicles, I think my passion there came from, well, I became head of OLEV with Natasha, and it's hard not to suddenly become really passionate about electric vehicles once you step into them. You go, this is a no-brainer. Why aren't more people doing it? Like, this is ridiculous. And then got my first car, because I actually didn't drive until we got an EV. And so I'm one of the few people who's never actually used a petrol pump. So when people talk to me about the wet fuel market, I'm like, my husband did, but I have no idea. So I've grown up with EVs. So for me, like I, you know, apart from the cost of public charging and the kind of, we've talked about the payment processes and the kind of the fact of the sequence, it feels like a no-brainer to be able to plug your car in overnight and wake up with a full battery and kind of, and get where you need to be. So for me, I've always in the kind of road transport grown up in that electric world, which I think is also quite helpful for this job.
Yeah, we're going to solve all that, you know, all that stuff. I always say this, we're getting it right now, so it doesn't matter for other people, so that everyone can grow up with electric, as you said so beautifully. And I love this story about you. They say that you can tell a really good person by the way they treat animals, and you wanted to devote your life and career to looking after and maintaining animals on this planet. So huge kudos for that. And I am not surprised about what you said about civil service and local authority. We talk a lot about the skills gap, and for me, the civil service and local authority is a fantastic place to start anyone's career, because there's multiple departments, you can move through them, there's a very structured career progression sort of chain, the pay, there's benefits, there's camaraderie, there's a lot of work to do, though. Those rumours about people working in a local authority not working hard and slacking off and whatever is so untrue. So often doing 1.5 or even 2 people's positions, because there simply isn't any money to pay for additional staff to come in. So this is where I think you get your work ethic from, your big heart, your wonderful demeanour. But you're also, when you need to be, I've seen you in action, ferocious with your point. You know, this one wonderfully soft, wonderful woman who we're speaking to today packs some punch. Where does that inner strength come from for you, do you think, Vicky?
Oh, I mean, that's very kind to say. Thanks, Sarah. I'll tell a little anecdote. So I remember I went to my leaving drinks with my team members when I was leaving government, and I think I can't remember what we were talking about, and it came up and somebody said, I don't think I'm that persistent. And one of my teammates said, oh my God, Vicky, you're the most persistent leader I've ever had. Like, you never give up and you always get what you want. I was like, oh, okay. I think it was a compliment. I hadn't quite realized people saw me in that light. As you say, I always thought I was soft and gentle in how I ask for things. Maybe I just make it a pain. But I do like to get my way. I do like to, in my own way, like I don't necessarily think I have the same approach as other people. But if I think something is the right thing to do, then I like to try to pursue it. And I try to make sure that we're doing the right thing in any way that we can. And I think actually as a woman, I think it's really interesting being a woman when you kind of have grown up in the transport world, which is a largely male dominated world. As you say, you do have a different way of doing things, and it doesn't mean that it's not as good, and it doesn't mean you can't get the same stuff done. But it is perhaps a new way and a slightly different approach. And I think certainly when I was growing up in the civil service, it was harder sometimes to actually get my point across, harder to intervene in meetings where everyone's talking over each other, harder to sort of say, actually, look, I can still do this job as well as the next person, just because I have a different way of doing it. It doesn't mean it's not going to get done. And I think celebrating these different ways of working, I think, is really important. And it was actually something the civil service did really well. But I think it is something as a woman to, you know, you are in a slightly different position sometimes, and you do have to fight a bit harder for what you want.
You do, but that does give us the courage. And I think I'll stand by my statement. You are this wonderful leader who has this wonderful way about you. And that difference is what has made you be so impactful in our industry. Particularly, I see that. I didn't realise we had so much in common. I knew we had a lot because I'm on my 22nd year in sustainable transport. And most of that was spent, 11, 12 years of that was in local authority. So for me, it's a really important subject. But I also didn't realise that you also had this ambition. I was selected by the WWF, not the Wrestling Federation, the World Wildlife Fund, to compete in a global competition when I was 18 to represent the UK. And the prize was to go and survey polar bears. Now, as it happened, this different way of doing things got me in a lot of hot water because they said, what are you most afraid of? And I always wish I'd made something up, but I said I was afraid of failing. And they decided that I was not worthy of the prize because they couldn't have someone on such a dangerous environment who was afraid of failing. And, you know, the psychological impact of that really affected me, particularly as the only female on the competition, thinking I'm not brave enough, I'm not strong enough, I'm not whatever. But no, I was just in the wrong game. As an adult, I'm really glad I didn't have to go and count polar bears. They're terrifying. I'm really glad that that pushed me down the road that it did. I'm really glad that I was true to myself in that interview. And I think watching you and everything you're leading on, and that what your lovely colleagues said to you about yourself in that leaving drinks, is something we should all hold on to. Just because it's different doesn't make it wrong. Just perhaps you're in the wrong boardroom, as our other wonderful guest has said before.
Indeed.
I think there's absolutely something about that. And can I just celebrate something that we all have in common, which is a love of animals? I too was a member of the WWF. I got my badge courtesy of the Beano. I applied and got all that and got my all the bits and pieces, along with my Nasher and Dennis the Menace kind of membership of that club as well. But I think the WWF is something that is an incredible organisation. A good friend of ours, Chris Ramsey, is a big fan of it too, you know. So it's great. And just, can I speak as a male just for a moment? I love the difference that women bring, and I wish more men would be aware of the value, because I think the challenge is, if we're told to do something, we tend not to. But I just wish we could kind of open, some men do need, and I observe in many a meeting where sometimes it's happening less, and I'm really happy to see that. Where men either won't engage with women, look at women, you know, as they're talking or as they're speaking to the room, they'll just look at other men, or they'll address men, or they won't ask a woman a question. And the difference we need to celebrate, because you bring huge value in a different way. And I think it's that difference that is the real value that we have. Anyway, soapbox off. And we'll do that. But it's great. And I love what I'm seeing, Vicky, just from my perspective and observing you and the way that you've come across. Just as we've talked about your journey, I've seen this engine room that is in there, this passion, and a quite a joyous passion as well. I love the laughing that kind of came along with that, the big smile, because I think, you know, joy is where we get our strength often. And it seems that, you know, making this difference and driving the change towards decarbonisation really is your engine room. And it's exciting. What do you see the future being for you?
I think that's such an interesting question. I guess I have a young family still, and I think a lot of my career decisions in the last few years have been centered around them, especially with one daughter who has a few kind of struggles. So I'd love to do this job, you know, for as long as they'll have me, as long as I can keep EVA England doing some really good work. And I think one of the things I love about this job is actually having my own voice as well. And I think, you know, Sarah, you'll understand this, but when you're in the government machine, you work in the shadows, that you don't have your own voice. You're working for, you know, what you think is a really good cause. You're trying to help get other people, but other people kind of speak to it. And I think what I've loved about this is actually being able to do stuff that I think is really important, but that I can make a difference. And I do feel in the last 7 months since kind of taking on this role, I feel like I have actually, you know, we are making a difference. We are changing things. We are kind of raising the profile of drivers. We are, some of the things we've asked for from government, we're starting to see come through. And I think that that's just really, really satisfying. And so, yeah, so as long as they have me, I'd love to do this role. And then I don't know, I'd love to stay in the EV sector, regardless of what happens in my family life in the coming years. So I think, yeah, but I'll cross that bridge, I think, when I come to it.
Well, very exciting, Vicky. We have, so with all of that in mind, and listen, what we're about to do is a personal thing. It doesn't have to be to do with your role, but here we go. We have a very special tradition where we hand somebody the EV Cafe magic wand, and here it is. There it is with its lightning bolt, and you know, sort of almost emulating the one that we wear, the little lightning bolt there. And so I'm going to hand you the so it's coming across the internet, the airwaves. There'll be a delay. There you go. You've got it. Absolutely, the magic wand is now in your hand, and you have the opportunity to make a wish now. With the wish doesn't have to be like all altruistic and, you know, what we would expect. We've had a personal chef. We've obviously had world peace, you know, all of those good things. What would you like to wave the magic wand over and make a difference in your way that you think will benefit both yourself and others?
That's such an interesting question. Gosh. So actually, do you want, I will stick to the decarb world. I'd love to wave a magic wand and create this future landscape where all the grid connections are in place, we're all driving electric, there's no noise, no pollution anywhere, and we're all just much happier people for it. So let's go, yeah, grid connections, put them in the right places. They're just there, and the whole system can build from it.
That's probably fantastic. Very boring. No, it's not, because I love the silence bit. Sarah, I don't know about you, but for me, the silence of EVs, noise, just like negative noise, can really stress levels, road rage, all that. We'd be happier. People, hello. Is that right, Sarah? What do you think?
I'm very lucky at Postre. I get to travel quite a lot, and it's really notable when you go to a city that's way more advanced than we are here in the UK, and particularly thinking of Amsterdam. Even 5-10 years ago, when I first went to Amsterdam and you got off the train and then there's an electric ferry buzzing about the city, and I mean buzzing, and then there's electric cars everywhere, it was properly eye-opening at the time. And the other marked improvement I've seen with not just the silence, of course, I do this for air pollution. You know, there's all sorts of science behind the electric vehicle revolution, and there's lots of naysayers and lots of difficulties, and all of that stuff goes away when you say, but what about the clean air? And every time I go to London now, I don't have sorry viewers black snot anymore, which is a wonderful difference that I've noticed since, you know, same with Bristol with the clean air zone. So I don't think I've ever been offered the magic wand. You know, each one of us came on the show early doors, but we didn't have the wonderful gift of the magic wand back then. So if I were to ask the same question, it would be the same as you, Vicky. And actually, I think you need to know that I'm just a massive Vicky fan, and I just messaged Paul directly to tell him that when I first met you, I was completely starstruck. I was like, oh, it's Vicky Edmonds. And I don't think you realise how impactful and powerful you've been, not just as the work that you've delivered, but just, I really admire your leadership qualities. I love your family life. I love your ethos. And I'm just so delighted that you said yes to come on to this podcast with us. It's been a gift. Thank you from me, from my heart.
Thank you. That's always, it's always very lovely to hear. Thank you.
And Vicky, is there anything that we've missed? Is there any sort of thing that we haven't asked you today that you wish we had, and or any sort of statement that you'd love to leave us with beyond everything that we've talked about? I just don't want us to miss anything, because you, as Sarah has already alluded to, you've got this great way about you and the real insight into the world that we inhabit. I mean, have we missed anything? Is there something you want to leave us with? Give us your final thoughts.
Yeah, well, I think leaving you, I guess I should create a good strap line, I think. But yeah, think about it from the driver's point of view. Whenever you're doing something, is it going to work for the driver? I think is a good sort of, I guess, not maybe a strap line, but a good objective. And I guess we touched very quickly on the auto and the cars really working. And I'd like to see more of a feedback loop there with the auto sector, because actually these cars are still new technologies. They've got these very heavy batteries in. And I think just a little bit more, and I think maybe that's kind of for another day, but just making sure that we don't just assume that we made it now, that the cars are continuing to develop, and are we getting that driver feedback? So I think the same applies to the auto sector. Are you really testing this with drivers who've driven these cars for a long time and really know them? Are you really kind of taking that feedback on?
Yeah. What would the driver say? There we go.
Yeah.
What would the driver say?
That's a good strap line. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, I don't know about everybody out there, but I have thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you, Vicky. And I'm sure there'll be many, many people that will give you feedback. And you know, as we've begun to sort of try and get these podcasts out to a much, much wider audience. So I'm sure many people will hear your passion. Hopefully they can join the EVA. I did join it. I think I might have lapsed. I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, it's like, you know, I've probably got like 6 Netflix subscriptions. So, you know, it's that sort of thing, isn't it? You know, we've all got these things that we're not really sure about. But I definitely invested for a while, and I would love to continue to support the work that you're doing. But many other people, I'm sure, would like to as well, because you're the voice of the driver. And so if you're driving an EV today, you need to head over to EVA, England, Wales, Scotland, depending on where you live, Ireland, wherever you live, and join up, support, because we need a voice. We need a voice when the payments don't work and the stats are dropping. We need a voice when we need to get across that pavement. We need a voice when we need to charge and share charging. We need a voice, and EVA is that voice. And Vicky, as you can see, is passionate about driving that change. So connect with her on LinkedIn, of course. Any other channels? Are you an Instagrammer, a Twitterer, or what? No, an Xer.
Yeah, EVA England is on all the channels. So follow us as an organisation. I personally restrict myself to LinkedIn and a couple of Facebook groups, where like EV Facebook groups, because that's where I have the most impact, I think. And as I say, also, I'm not great at IT tech, so that's one of the learning curves for me on this new role, is just promoting social media and promoting that profile. But yeah, but please do follow us, please do connect with us, and yeah, thanks for the shout out as well.
Fantastic. Well, all of the links will be in the description. We'll discover wherever you are, Vicky and EVA, and look forward to hearing more from the EVA and seeing how this education piece and the driver piece really begins to build out. And until next time, everybody, there's lots of stuff. Saz, any final thoughts before we go?
Maybe we should call it the Electric Voice Association.
Oh, yeah.
but no, in all seriousness, nothing from me, only to say a huge thank you once again. And I'm a huge supporter, not least of you personally, but the EVA England true.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, until next time, everybody, check out all of the links, the evcafe.org. If you want to get a vehicle, you can head over to our website now, because leasing.com, you can see all of the vehicles, the best value vehicles out there on that website, so that you'll be able to get your bum on a seat of an electric vehicle and a van too. Happy days. Until next time, everybody, have a great day.